When you talk to retired educators, is there a different message than talking to the current educators who have been so politically active, especially in the last year or two?
It's a lot of informing. Things have really changed, and the pace it's changing is quite quickly. That classroom, I was a classroom teacher, but I will say it looks very different than it did even when I was in the classroom. So just giving them an update of where things are, what accountability we're under, what are the laws that are happening, what the state governance structure looks like. It is different because they have a frame of mind that they are coming from, and so making sure that we are providing them with an updated version of what's actually going on is a good thing.
What sort of feedback do you get from them about how things have changed and whether those changes are good?
Yeah, I mean, we talk about the good, the bad, and the ugly. So there are parts of it that people will recognize that that's a great opportunity for kids. There are other parts of it that that's quite frustrating to them, and they can put a reference to that as far as what does that actually mean as a classroom teacher and how that impacts not only the teacher but also the students and their families. So we have mixed reactions to depending on what we're talking about.
In terms of their thoughts on things like standardized testing, especially very high stakes testing, as it affects not just students' performance, but school funding, it affects pay for teachers. Has that discussion morphed over time, not just with them, but with the in-the-classroom teachers now? Are you seeing changes in that, or are you seeing people entrenching on their sides? What's your feeling as you go around and you talk to people?
That is an area that has really evolved. So I student taught here at Battleground at the elementary, and at the time when I did that in second grade, we were giving an I-step for about the first time at a grade that we don't even test anymore, and it was very low stakes, very low stress, and that environment was very different. Now teachers have kind of gone through an evolution of we've gone from that extreme to super high-stake accountability. What your raises are on that, your school grades on that, your child's sometime retention, your student retention's on that. So there are a lot of high-stake accountability pieces that many would argue are punitive that are placed upon those standardized tests. But at this point, what I'm seeing is people who've kind of lived through that evolution in the classroom, that whole span of time, we've gone from, it's kind of the grieving process, where now I kind of see people that are kind of, I see them surrender, and then they get fired back up when we knew I have a new assessment. I've seen people just flat out leave the profession. They've just had enough and they say, I'm out. We've had people that have said, you know, I'm going to be a louder advocate and I'm going to try to get things changed. So people take different avenues to reflect how they're feeling about it. You know, some of it is support for parts of it, but that punitive accountability piece is tough on everybody.
It seems like that's the same thing is true of you. It seems like your public statements have kind of evolved over time too. Would you say that's true?
Probably. I would say, too, it's a lot easier when you I don't have any skin in the game politically. You know, at this point in time, I am an educator. I understand what's on the line for educators. I understand the need for an advocate. I understand the need for an advocate who's been in the trenches. So I think that's a fair statement, but I think the stakes are different for me. I will continue to serve in some capacity students once I leave office, but I have no loyalties to any political party at this point. I have no loyalties to any political agendas. My loyalty is to students, and it's always been, but it can be much freer when you have nothing on the line politically.
As you get to the end of not just your term in office, but the elected superintendent position, how do you view what's happened since you've been in the office and how that discussion might affect the first appointed superintendent and how they do their job?
The 2020 election for the governor's race is going to be extremely important because of the governance structure of Indiana. That one office is going to have an immense amount of power from pre-K all the way through higher education and into the workforce. And honestly, that's not normal across the nation. That is a governance structure that is not seen very much across the nation because there's more people voice and people selection in many of the other states. So we'll pay attention to the philosophy, the ideas, the rhetoric that's coming from that governor. Race, I think that's going to be extremely important to watch to know what's going to happen. I mean, I can make my people will ask me a lot when I'm across the state, what do you think is going to happen? It really is dependent upon who the governor is, how supportive they are of public education, and how owned they are by some really deep pocket people. So it's going to be very interesting to watch the whole thing play out.
I have to ask, you said a second ago, you're not beholden to a political party or political ideology, you're for the students. I'm not going to be the first person to ask you this, but you've been traveling the state with Senator Eddie Melton. There are some people who are speculating he might run for governor next year. There are probably people speculating, hey, you might make a good running mate. Is this something that has even been discussed between you and he?
You know, I'm not ruling anything out. I commend Senator Melton. He's not announced he's running yet. He's still an exploratory. I think he's got some great ideas, but yet he's not even at that point. But I'm not ruling anything out. And for me, it's about, you know, education should never be a political partisan issue. It should be bipartisan or no politics involved, but that's not realistic in Indiana. So we're looking at who's better aligned to public education, who's been a big big celebrator of it, who's been supportive of teachers, who's been an advocate for funding that is much needed. So that piece for me has been very easy with Senator Melton as far as being on the road with him, because we're very much aligned to the K-12 issues, and he sees what I see. He's lived in the trenches at the state house long enough now. So that's been good. And I think people have appreciated that folks from both sides of the aisle have been together and been on the road and said, look, it doesn't matter if you're Republican, Democrat, or independent, or, you know, whatever you're affiliated with, it doesn't matter. It's about kids. So it's been a good learning opportunity for both of us. We've been very good listeners. We've also shared information when asked. So I'm leaving everything open to the future. We'll see.
One of the reasons I ask is that the last couple of election cycles, the person who was the winner of the superintendent's race, in some cases, has gotten among the most votes of any candidate on the statewide ballot. You were in that position. Glenda Ritz was in that position. And so that obviously, that education piece clearly carries some cachet with voters. And so do you think that makes you somebody who would be a good person to run for higher statewide elected office?
I think it puts a state superintendent in an interesting position. I would argue that it puts an attorney general in an interesting position most times because of the amount of votes that they get traditionally, historically, through time in Indiana. So, yes, I would agree with your statement. It does put you in an interesting position. I think education is important to many people. Everybody, whether you have your own children, you have neighbors, you are part of a community. Many of our communities in Indiana really depend upon their schools being great to keep them alive. And so that interest in education is kind of fascinating, but being a big vote getter is extremely important in Indiana. You know, I pride myself because when I was on the trail for the first time with no political experience, I had to lean on a lot of people who had some experience. And I watched Todd Young, and he worked it hard. And I'd never met Todd Young before that race, and he worked it hard. And he went to a lot of events and was on the road a lot. And I was just super proud to hang in there about 10,000 votes shy, which I thought was pretty impressive when I was a mom and a working superintendent. And it was a different pace for me than it was for Senator Young. But I think those votes definitely play into the conversation.
What, in your estimation, is the education topic right now that people are not talking enough about that you think they should talk more about or pay more attention to?
Where the dollars are going and the quality surrounding education. So where the dollars are going, we talk about public schools, we talk about charter, and we talk about private, and the people assume they're three buckets of money, they're one bucket of money. And so that impacts when you're trying to do a lot more with a lot less, that has an impact. You know, we're 50 out of 50 states on teacher salaries since 2002, which is not where you want to be. You factor in inflation, you're still at the bottom, not where you want to be. So that piece of adequate funding, and people can pat themselves on the back and say it's historical funding. We're not even to the 2009 funding levels. So we've got a ways to go. But again, we're doing a lot more with a lot less. That piece is huge. Just making sure that they have a handle on the funding piece.
You're talking right now to me just down the road from where Mitch Daniels is leading Purdue. There are a lot of people who put that at the feet of him, taking $300 million out of the education budget as the state was in the midst of a recession. There are a lot of people who say, look, it never quite got put all the way back. Is that one of the reasons you're saying the gubernatorial election next year is important? Because obviously Eric Holcomb is somebody who learned from Mitch Daniels. Is there a continuum there that you want people to see?
Yeah, and it's bigger than the governor. I mean, it goes back to the speaker and the pro tem have an immense amount of power in our General Assembly. So there are a lot of pieces that go into this, but it all factors into where we are today. Circuit breaker with property tax caps cannot be ignored. What's happening with TIFs and abatements cannot be ignored. So a lot of it goes to a lot of powerful politicians in the state of Indiana. It's just a matter of we are who we vote for, and voters have to be informed of what exactly is happening to make some informed decisions.
With respect to all of the school funding being one bucket, what is your view now about, say, charter schools and vouchers in terms of how the state should proceed? when we have an appointed superintendent going forward in terms of how we allocate that money. Because, of course, education is, if not the biggest, one of the biggest parts of the statewide budget every 2 years.
Yeah, we're over half of the state budget. We're about 52%. We also get an additional $1 billion from the feds. And so we are a $9 billion machine. We are expensive. And I own that and understand the responsibilities of that. Regarding the choice in Indiana, you know, there's quality choice where I understand it's important for a child to go to a school that's a good fit. As a parent, I would have wanted that, and I did. My child went to the public school where I was a superintendent, and he got a great education K through 12. And if he wasn't getting a good education, I would have sought, because I had the means to do so, an education that would have been a better fit for him, whether that's another traditional school or private or charter or whatever it would have been. But I would have sought that out. And I think most parents can wrap their minds around that. Most people can wrap their minds around it. However, it goes to what can we fund and the quality control around that. So we are kind of the wild, wild west of choice. We have a lot of expand for the safe expansion. This year we had, I think, 6 close down and 7 start up, and that's not uncommon. We have charters that start up, get common school loans, and walk out of the state of Indiana, and kids are scrambling to find another school to attend, and they've just left with millions of dollars. We have the virtual school situation with the virtual charter that's $46 million issue. So the controls on the quality is not helping, is certainly not helping the conversation. I think if we're going to have choice, which if the current leadership stays in place, choice is not going to go away. But as taxpayers, we should say, where's that money going? We should have the transparency. We should have accountability. We should also have some quality control. So it's not just the wild, wild west of anybody can try anything. If they're hitting the standards, great. If they're not, great. Because our kids are so mobile that they're going to attend maybe one school 1 year, pop to another school, or 1 week and pop to another school. And it doesn't help any of us if there are not quality controls placed upon that.
There's been some reporting done in the last 6 or 8 months about the amount of the voucher money that's going to, say, religious institutions. And then, of course, you have what happened at Roncalli, and then the things that happened, the response from Brebeuf and other places. And they're talking about, do you need to have more rules in place, not just for which schools get the money, but indeed what the rules are at those schools if they are to even be eligible. Does that dovetail with what you were just talking about a possible need for more regulation about how this all goes? Are we out of the experimentation phase, and now we have enough data to go, okay, we know what works and we know what we could do better?
We've got a lot of trend data that we can produce. As a taxpayer, I believe that if taxpayer money is going to an institution, they should be inclusive. And if they don't choose to be inclusive, they should not be taking taxpayer money. So that's student and staff inclusivity. So I have a real issue. I mean, when we see schools that are taking voucher money and they will not let a child who identifies as LGBTQ enroll, or a family who maybe has gone through a divorce or whatever the case may be, that there's an exclusionary clause or many exclusionary clauses, but yet taxpayer money is going to that institution. If they're not taking taxpayer money, they won't hear a word from me. I have a real issue with taxpayer money going to exclusionary practices.
How has being in this job changed your view of politics in the state, education policy? Have you noticed a shift in yourself since you've been in this job? Have you noticed a shift in the parties, maybe away from where you thought you were running a few years ago? What's that been like?
Sure. I mean, anytime I've had a great opportunity to serve Indiana, and I've grown a lot personally and professionally. I've learned a lot along the way, which is the benefit, and that's the goal of anything you do in life. So I've learned a lot about the political side of things, and some of it I wish I could unlearn. I knew politics were just difficult, but there's a lot of money on the line, and I don't mean state revenue. I mean just the political monies that are tied to a lot of agendas, and that can be exhausting. There's a lot more waste than people would realize, and as a local superintendent who there was no room for waste, and that was the goal of never to have waste, and obviously you always had some, but the amount of waste and inefficiencies is appalling. So I've learned a lot about that. I've also learned a lot about going across the state of how diverse Indiana truly is, and some of the great opportunities that we have, but also some of the real challenges that we have. So I've just learned a lot. I'm really proud of what our schools are doing. Do we have room to improve, regardless of the type of school? Absolutely. But we're doing some things, and we're doing some things really well.
You sound almost a little relieved at the notion that you're not going to be in elected office all that much longer, that you'll be a little more untethered and allowed to speak your mind and go and advocate in the way that you want to advocate that maybe you couldn't when you were under the official banner of Superintendent of Public Instruction. Is that fair?
It's really difficult when you're not a true politician to be in a political position. So I have stayed true to the, I know what it is to be an educator. I know what it is to be state superintendent, but that political piece has been very, very difficult for me. I don't like to play games. I'm used to show the good, the bad, and the ugly. You show the data, you lay everything out. I was used to showing all my cards, which I learned quickly. That's not how this game is played. I would go into meetings and say, here's the good, here's the data, here's where we're struggling, and show everything. And that always did not work for me, and many a times it came back to work against us. So that's just not how I feel things can get accomplished. I'm also very used to working with a lot of people. So when I came into office, we were Ellis Island. I said, come one, come all. If you have questions, you want to learn about education, we don't care who you are, what party you're affiliated with. A lot of people took advantage of that, but that wasn't always popular upstairs that we were taking that approach. We will continue to do that. We've got, like I said, 1.2 million students on the line, and shame on us if we don't listen to everybody.